Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, Black America. This is We Talk Productions presenting Black Urban America. And my name is Kenny Jones. This song been out like our second or third week back on Blog Talk. We are still working out the kinks and trying to get back to where we were before we decided to take a time out because we was having problems with Blog Talk, and we continue to have some issues with Blog Talk, and we're trying to be patient on this end. The lineup is we still have Call to Steve with Provocative Thought on Saturday, and tomorrow, hopefully, Shaka Zulu, Jermaine Harris, will be back on Wednesdays. Now, all you guys that are listening by laptop and have something to say or comment, the call-in number is 516-531-9540. That's 516-531-9540. And we have some guests coming up. Next week, we have Ms. Michonne Williams, Sister Michonne. April 7th, we have Brother Tory. April 14th, we have Sister Natalie. April 21st, we have Sister Shango. I've been interested to meet Sister Shango. Brother Jesse will be here on the 28th April. And we do have lineups in May, but it's too far ahead to name these. Yes, we can really get back on board and what have you. Now, tonight's discussion, I just want to examine. Oh, before I get into tonight's discussion, I hope everyone is functioning well, is doing well in your state during the shutdown. I know our president has not put any federal legislation about the shutdown. He keep on saying a couple weeks, 15 days, 15 days, but health experts are saying, like, no, the two to six months. I'm not a health expert. I'm not a doctor. All I know is I hope that everyone is functioning well, trying to do well, trying to stay safe. You know, I hear different views and perspectives about this virus or what have you, but I just want you to stay safe and take care of your family and take care of self. You know, so with that said, I hope everyone is well. Yeah, let's get back to tonight's topic. You know, give Black folks and people that have been supporting me for over a couple of years, I want to thank them. You know, I stay on issues concerning the Black neighborhood, the Black communities. Looking where we were and looking at where we are today and looking at what we're going to be tomorrow. So I just want to examine how we were prior to the Civil Rights Act of 1964. What happened afterwards, the Civil Rights Act of 1964? You know, how was the economics of the Black communities, neighborhoods, businesses, spending prior to the Civil Rights Act of 1904? How were our school system, colleges, you know, how were they functioning prior to the Civil Rights Act of 1964? In fact, let's look at what is the Civil Rights Act of 1964? You know, what is the language of the Civil Rights Act of 1964? It says, Civil Rights Act of 1964 that prohibits discrimination on the basis of race, color, religion, sex, and national origin. Enacted on July 2nd, 1964, with the signature of President Lyndon B. Johnson. The Civil Rights Act of 1964 granted equal access to employment, schools, and public spaces. Access. I like that word, access. In an article written by Leslie Godfrey, examine how the 1964 Civil Rights Act cost Black America. Because we had the opportunity to have access. Having access means, you know, you have a choice. You could go to if you want to. You could purchase if you want to. Not to leave behind. Who could have foreseen that the passing of the landmark Civil Rights Act of 1964, which outlawed racial segregation, yes, if you have a comment, just press one, which outlawed racial segregation, would spark an exodus by the African Americans to the white suburbs, which caused a decline of Black neighborhoods across America, South Carolina, Virginia, New York, you know, and on DC. You know, we left our cities and went to the suburbs. And now if you look at it today, you had those same folks that we ran to is coming back to the city and causing what? Gentrification. Now, was all our neighborhoods beautiful? And did we have problems? Yes, we had problems. We had issues, but it was our issues. It was our problems to address. We had our representatives from these neighborhoods. We had our businesses from these neighborhoods. We have our schools in these neighborhoods. We have our community organizations in these neighborhoods. And again, it wasn't all peaches and cream, but it was our neighborhoods. We had the Black middle class in our neighborhoods. We had the Black upper class in our neighborhoods. We had the Black working class in our neighborhoods. We had the Black lower income in our neighborhoods, trying to survive, trying to exist, and trying to build our community to compete in the open market. Now, Civil Rights Act in 1964, two things happened. We start shopping in their stores, and their stores start coming up in our neighborhoods and competing with our mom and pop's grocery, where our mom and pop clothing stores, where our mom and pop jewelry stores, what have you. And guess what? Asset. We had asset. We were able to go into their stores and I turned out back. See, prior to 1964, no, the store was locked. We could go in their fitting rooms. We could spend our money, but we couldn't try on their clothes. And then some parts of the country, we couldn't even go into their stores. We couldn't go in their restaurants. No problem. Don't you know that they could have came into our, they came into our restaurants. They came into our stores. It wasn't nothing to see white folks on 125th Street and prior to the Civil Rights Act of 1964. But assets permitted us to say, hey, I could go in that restaurant downtown. I could go into that store. And, hey, I have the money, baby. I could go into that suburb and buy that White House. I have the money. Prior to the Civil Rights Act, Act of 1964, we had our own theaters, churches, mutual aid societies, restaurants, hotels. Can you name a black-owned hotel today? No, we have restaurants. We still have black-owned restaurants, you know. But the thing is assets. And assets equal integration. Integration equals assimilation. If you have a comment, 516-531-9540. After the signing of the 1964 Civil Rights Financial Independence. And also, another reason why blacks went to the suburbs, the white suburbs, you know, a lot of things was going on in the late 60s. After Malcolm got assassinated, after King got assassinated, you know, riots started. And so it was another wave. It was another wave because people were was running from, you know, the violence, really, in the late 60s. Yes, 314-381. Welcome to Black Urban America.
You know, I might have to kind of disagree with you on that, man.
Go ahead.
Let's talk about this movement, and I'm going to give you a name of a city.
What's your name?
My name is Pianki. Okay. Have you ever heard of Ferguson, Missouri?
Yes, I heard of Ferguson, Missouri, yes.
Okay. Blacks that lived in North City, St. Louis, especially in areas like Walnut Park, O'Fallon Park, the Ville.
Mm-hmm.
The Ville is where Homer G. Phillips was. Annie Malone Children's Home. Annie Malone wasn't the first. She was about the second African-American female millionaire.
Mm-hmm.
Madam C.J. Walker was not first. Okay. You had nice homes, well-kept property and so forth. Then what happened? Blacks start moving out of the projects. Now, they didn't go south, St. Louis, because it was white. And through politics and that, they went into these areas where blacks had established homes. Well, guess what? The blacks fled that, and they moved to the outskirts of St. Louis into municipalities like Pine Lawn, Jennings, Ferguson, Dellwood, Castle Point, Berkeley, Charlotte. Okay. And whites began, you know, whites moved out. I mean, I know blacks that don't want to live around certain people. But what happened, blacks bought these homes. They weren't congested. They had parks, good schools, and property values. And we're talking about like in the 70s. Okay. You had the incident with Ferguson and Mike Brown, the rioting and that in 2014. But the people that was moved from the projects in the North St. Louis, they tore that stuff up. There wasn't no whites there. And the politics, I'm telling you like it is, the Democratic politics with the schools and everything. So they, because of the condition of the houses and the dilapidation and so forth, the politics began to push them into Ferguson. About 5 or 10 years maybe before 2014 with Mike Brown. So guess what? The blacks that had been living out there, especially around the time of those riots, they fled that area. And the sad thing about it, they lost money because they couldn't get the money that they had invested in their property, you know, like they should have. You know, like, for instance, whoever, like, whites lived in that area, they probably built a house for $15,000. They turned around and sold it for probably $80,000.
Yeah.
Blacks moved in. Yeah, blacks moved into it. They couldn't sell it for no $200,000 because the people that was there to buy it, they weren't going to pay that kind of money. But they fled the area, and they lost a lot of equity, the type of equity that you use to take out your house to send your child to school, to pay down payments for your child's, their home. If they don't want to stay in that house, they left. And now those areas are going down.
So what's the disagreement with me? So far, you're agreeing with me. So what's your disagreement with me, what I said?
Well, I think you're trying to say that these people were not supposed to move. But they had to move.
Well, the thing is, okay, how come when – I just want to ask this. How come there is a problem – of black folks living with each other, no matter what the income level is? And the first time, I'm not talking about project areas. I'm not talking about that. Okay, if you got $1 million, you're supposed to live with projects. Okay, let's get that out of the way. But the first,
I know what you're gonna ask me. Let me tell you. I know what you, and I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but I know what you're gonna ask me. Let me tell you what the problem is. Like, when they moved these blacks into Ferguson, those blacks did not have the means to take care of those properties. See, you moving out of the city of St. Louis where the trash pickup is free, water is free, and so on and so on. So, well, you moving out in a community where you have to pay
your trash. Breaking up.
You can't cut grass and take the lawnmower and blow the clippings out in the streets. And they got tough policing in these areas. Believe it or not, Ferguson was about 67% black. But they had a police department that was damn near 100% black. You know, they talked about that. They had 53 officers and 52 of them was white. You know why come? Because the blacks that lived in that area wanted tough policing. And that's why it was like that. Now, here's the thing. Yeah, I mean, we can fast forward. In these urban areas, these school systems are terrible. Those schools are not giving those children the skills that they need in order to compete wherever they end up at. And a lot of times they end up in these historical black colleges. That's why come so many of them are not doing it as well as they are, because the kids that come into them have not been prepared for the rigors of college. Now, it's not the child's fault. A child's a child. It's the society's fault. Black society in these areas don't care, seemingly, about their child. And what they need to have is the ability for those that are coming from functional homes. When I'm talking about a functional home, you know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And they concerned about, they need to be able to take their child out of the environment that doesn't go along with their overall long-term plan.
I don't know if you could say that these blacks don't care about their children.
Let me tell you what.
Let me finish. I think it's the environmental factors that make it difficult to parent sufficiently, such as, you got to work a full-time and a part-time job, and the child is left with the older sister or the older brother to fend for themselves while you are out there working.
Where's the father? Bills.
You know, that's not caring. It's the economic, financial factors in our communities that make it difficult for parenting. And you got to look at it.
I'm going to ask you again, where is the father? And then you just answered what I just got through saying. Not only are the children not being educated, that generation of parents wasn't educated because they came up in that same situation. And guess who's running those schools? You have black administrators, superintendents, and you have these teachers' unions that don't want things to change. Why is that? Because they make money off of it. They make money in wages and salary, pensions and benefits. The politics. If you live in a Democratic area, they don't want to hear nothing about school choice. Even though, like in Missouri, the state says that your curriculum in a school district can be whatever the school district wants. That is the parents, the textbooks, the curriculum, and the teacher's instruction, instructional material. Politicians and like organizations like the NAACP, and you know they are the spokesperson of poor black people. They say, those are my people. I ain't got nothing against you.
They have not been doing a good job, neither over the past 25, 30 years.
Let me tell you something, sir. I ain't never spoke to you in my life. Don't even know you. I ain't got nothing to gain from telling you this. I'm telling you based on experience. And people don't want to hear it sometimes. The conditions that's going on, and yes, you right, there was racist. Well, and I don't, and basically, you can't blame them because what we're seeing going on now actually happened just like they thought it would happen. And they didn't have nothing to do with it because they long gone.
That's right. Yeah, I agree with that.
Now, solution? You have to educate as many of them children as you possibly can. There's no reason why come black college students are overrepresented in low-paying majors. If you're in a low-paying major, that means your profession ain't going to pay you much money. So how in the heck are you ever going to close this educational gap? It ain't that they want whites won't hire you. That's a lie. They are hiring. And I can give you illustrations of that. Well, if you got good STEM students, they would snatch them up like they're a piece of gold laying on the sidewalk, hundreds at a time.
How about having our own businesses, our own corporations?
Well, let me say this. You can't come out of college and then start a corporation. I mean a viable corporation.
No, I'm talking about people that have been around for a while.
Well, like the ones that's on the Black Enterprise Top 100 Black Businesses. Well, that's a question that has to be had with them, because whatever they're doing, they are doing it well. Like Dave Stewart is the his revenue is $12 billion a year. He's black. Then you got in the top 20 black businesses on the top 100. You have about six or seven that's in the automobile industry. You got Janice Bryant. She's about $3 billion a year in her business. Now, I mean, that's what she's got. Now, if you got somebody, if someone was to come to anyone and say, hey, look, we got a plan where you can expand over here. But it takes people who's experienced in the business before they can go in and try. See, you can't come out of harsh. See, I was a structural steel erector. I erected bridges, office buildings, 30 and 40 stories, industrial work like changeover for GM and Ford. I couldn't have came out of college and started doing that. I had to work at that for a decade and a half before I knew it. You follow me?
I agree.
Then some politics had to come into play, which I took advantage of it. All these things had to come into play. And that's what we need. I mean, that's what's needed amongst African Americans. They need to have blacks that's in those, and I'm saying companies, not business, because business would be somebody doing nails and selling wigs. You need companies and corporations. And you have to be in the manufacturing and production. For instance, like Donald Trump has reopened up uranium mining in the United States. Well, I don't know of any blacks that's going to be in that. Why? Well, one reason, you don't have any blacks that's in these colleges taking up geology and the earth sciences.
Yeah, that's true.
You, let me tell you one thing. You can't blame and say, well, United States and European countries are taking the resources out of Africa. Well, it's not the government. It's companies. And if blacks had a company, they could be over there doing the very same thing. But you got to have the people that knows what's going on and how to do it.
Okay,
I'm just telling you what I experienced.
So
now, what we get out of this conversation?
We need some of these skills that are marketable, that's in the future, that's going to benefit our community.
I agree with you.
These companies need to be competing globally.
Well,
your kids got to have those skills.
They
can hire our children. We don't have to go to other culture and ask them to hire our children. We can hire our own children if we have our own, more of our own companies and corporations.
Let me tell you who's hiring your children. There's an organization, they're not the only one. It started back in 1972. It's the National Society of Black Engineers. You had some blacks that came together and said, we need to, yes, they do an excellent job. They have national convention. They won't have one this year because of the virus. Mm-hmm. But in the last three national conventions, in 17 and 18, in Pittsburgh, and I think in Kansas, and the one they had last year in 19 was in Detroit. In 17 and 18, they had about 11,000 STEM students there. Last year, they had over 15,000 in Detroit. 17 and 18, you had Northrop Grumman, based out of Mississippi, a defense contractor. 2 years in a row, they hired over 400 black STEM graduates. 2 years in a row. Not forgetting the other hundreds of corporations that was there, like Chevron, Boeing, Lockheed Martin. Lockheed Martin last year hired over 400 out of Detroit convention. You got the CIA, FBI, you got Harley Davidson, you got Ford Motor Company, you got Amazon and Google. They are hiring what's in demand. And you know what makes it so good? That president you got in office today, he made a statement. He said that the foreigners that are here working in these professionals, because they have a lack of Americans, when your visa expires, you have to go home because your job will be replaced with an American. I never heard no president say that, man. Never. And guess who that's going to benefit? Your kids.
I wonder what type of foreigners are going to be going home. We ain't talking
about a lot of Indians. A lot of Indians, because
which are people of color, which are people of color, but nobody from London or Australia could be asked to go home.
No, they all go home. I know for sure. And just because they are people of color, they not white, you ain't gonna go to their country and work like they come to your country and work. You're not gonna go
and
I work with Nigerians. You go to Nigeria and start something, you're gonna have to have a Nigerian partner. So that's the way it is. You got to get your children educated. They have to be educated. And they got to be educated in what's in high demand. There's millions of dollars in scholarships that's left on the table that's specifically for black and African American students because they don't qualify for them. You know, the community service, keeping a resume of community service work, essays, and so on and so on, and not only that, but the grades. I tell you something else. If your child is going to a public school and they bring it home, report cards saying they make an A, you know what you need to do? You need to take them to a Sylvan, and have them evaluated and say, is my child doing sixth grade work? And they'll let you know. They'll test them and let you know. Put them through some drills and let them know. And if they are not, and their report card is saying that, then you go back to their school district and say, hey, I had my child independently and analyzed, independently evaluated, and they came back and say that this report card is lying. So you need to pay what it takes for me to bring my child up to where they're supposed to be.
Well, the thing is, do parents know about this? And why are our schools, if our schools today are run by black superintendents, black principals, we got majority black teachers in these schools, why are our children, why are our black boys not, are still dropping out at a 69-70% rate?
Because, sir, they're dropping out because it's not of interest to them for one reason. You got a whole host of other reasons that goes along with that. It's not just no easy solution. But what I'm saying to you is that the ones that's coming from functional families, you know what a functional family, you got a child, don't you? You expose your child. You take them to museums. You make them write book reports. You make them do math drills at home. You make them, make your child do speed reading courses. You make your child, when they get in the ninth grade, take the SAT or the AC test as many times as they possibly can. You can take it 12 times before you graduate. You have your child to be go and take those college entrance exam prep courses. That's functional parents. You sit down and talk to your child. You make sure they keep busy. You expose them to things.
I don't think that's going on in the average everyday black family, even the functional family, even the so-called functional black family. I don't think
I tell you what, that's what needs to be going on.
Yes. And that one, you know, you take them to the Stromberg Center in Harlem. You take them to culturally events that would stimulate their mind and their soul. But however,
you're absolutely right.
Is that going on? Is that going? I mean, shoot. You talk about the kids.
Not as much as it should. No.
You might have to educate these parents to do this, because these parents, I doubt it, that 90% of the, no matter what income level, 90% of the parents don't know what you are talking about right now.
I know they don't. And, you know, here's another thing, too. Parts of black society is about 60 years behind.
More
that
than that,
part.
Sir. More than that. They say 150 years. 150.
Well, I say there's 160 years in Africa. But they are behind because the things that it takes to make a family, you got children. You got mother and father with jobs and income. And then you got for real grandparents. I ain't talking about no 35-year-old grandparents. You got for real grandparents.
31
that
now.
Came up.
I know grandparents that's 31, 33 years old.
Goddamn. But you got grandparents that don't work at a profession, who's retired, and they have an income in Social Security and pensions. Then they can be a intergenerational asset toward raising those kids.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have all that. And we did have one time, of course, we were lacking. And I ain't going to deny the racism and other things that was that held blacks back. Yes, those things exist. But damn, we got to keep moving.
But see, there's a point in time also. We all know there's white supremacy. We all know there's racism. But we also know that we have to be accountable. And again, prior to the 70s, prior to the Civil Rights Act, we were doing for self. And the racism back then, it was like in your face. It was overt. And we still had our own. Still had it, and people going to these beautiful black historical colleges and whatnot. Now today, after the Civil Rights Act, and after the 70s and the crack era of the 80s, we have our families, our 75% of our families are headed by women. Now, there always been single women families, always in our history. But however, most of our families had some type of father figure in the home. Now today,
you had to have
there is no father figure in the home, and that's
women cannot turn a male into a man. I'm sorry. Now
no.
I know people go say, "Well, my auntie." Well, if that's the case, why is it always a conversation? There's a tried, proved, and tested method here in the United States. Go to school, get an education. You get a good job, get married, have children. Repeat it. Repeat it. Repeat it. At some point in time, that circle was broken. And it's taken all hell outdoors to get it back together. And you're paying for it.
I could tell what broke it. I could tell you what it was. The 80s. It was the early to, yeah, it was the whole 80s during the crack epidemic. Because prior to the crack epidemic, we had what you call functional families. The crack epidemic really tore up our communities, and we tear up our community to tear up our families. And mother, I mean, that's when the foster care system rose. The foster care system really became big back in the 80s because they were taking children, they were separating children, like in the slave day, they were separating children from their mothers.
They're making money off of them.
Let me tell you something else,
brother.
It's a multi-billion dollar system, billion dollar
system. Let me tell you something else. Them black politicians is making money off of black conditions too. I can name a lot of them because
they've been
around too damn long. You had Elijah Cummings, he did. He was out of Baltimore. You got Maxine Waters out there in California.
Mm-hmm.
You got Clyburn down there in South Carolina. You got John Lewis there in Atlanta, Georgia. You look at what you got. Look at the cities. The cities that's ran by these black politicians have the highest poverty rate. And I hate to say this, they Democratic. Now, let me put it like this. When you get to a certain economic level, Democratic policies actually work against you. They want high taxes. They want controls. They want to take from you and give to others.
And they want to change your lifestyle.
They want to change your lifestyle. Yeah, you're right. They ain't got to that.
They want to change. I'm going to tell you something. Between me and you and whoever's listening, to me, there's no difference between Republican and Democrat. To me, I think that. When it comes to local or state legislation, I think we really have to be involved. And we really have to find people that can represent us on the local and state level. Now, when you get on to what's coming up today, these national politics, to me, there's no difference between a Democrat and a Republican. You got that don't care and then one that lied to you.
let me tell you something. It's different between Donald Trump and the rest of them. I've been around since Eisenhower, and let you know how old I am and what I've seen. He is something else, and they do not like him. They would like to kill him.
Trump represent the average white man thinking, and which is not positive towards.
He represent blacks thinking too, like the ones I told you that Sled Ferguson. Yes, it does. I'm telling you.
Trump is like 1982. No, no, Donald Trump. If you got money, yeah.
Well, but listen. His first address to Congress. He said that African American students need school choice. I have never heard a politician at that level, let alone at the state level, that says those things. We just got through talking about it. I got to get going, man. But anyway.
Thank you for calling, man. Call in again. I'm on every Tuesday. We got guests coming on starting next Tuesday. I really appreciate you for your support.
Thank you very much, sir. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Hey, that was a very stimulating. He had to go after I started talking about Donald Trump. You know, anybody else that want to call 516-531-9540, if you have anything to say, you can press 1 and you come right on to the show. Now, I'm going to conclude. I'm going to summarize. And I'm going to state that according to historical evidence, the Civil Rights Act of 1964 has not benefited the black man. I don't care what anyone says. You know, did it benefit some? Yes. But did it benefit the collective? Did it benefit the collective? You know, and, you know, the Civil Rights Act of 1964 reintegrated society. We integrated very well at the hands of giving up our own, and which made the other culture much powerful. To have control over these superintendents, to have control over these principals, to have control over these local politicians, these congressmen, these black congressmen, these black senators. You don't see any other culture being controlled. No, another call, 773. Okay, all right. Welcome to Black Urban America. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello, this is Michonne.
Michonne, you're supposed to come on next week. How are you?
I was listening.
Oh, okay. How you doing?
I am great. I just found this very interesting, what I was listening to.
Do you have any comment or question?
Well, I do have, well, kind of a comment.
Go ahead.
I do agree that these black politicians been in office too long, and they are not doing anything for their people, and I do believe they are helping themselves because of the state of the people where they're at in their location, in their districts. They seem like they're coming up and their people stay down.
So how can we change? I'm sorry, go ahead.
And as far as the schools and the school districts, I have a daughter who's a school teacher in Maryland, in Silver Springs, Maryland. And she recently moved to the East Coast, and she was subbing when she moved there in the D.C. schools. And she told me how horrible every day it was in the schools and how they were passing children who couldn't read, couldn't do anything. But my kids are raised where they have excellent schools. But I lived in a mostly Republican town also. And where I live, the multimillionaires there, their kids go to public schools. They don't go to private schools.
Now, how is that public school system?
It is excellent.
Well, what's my daughter... Well, I just hold up, Michelle. What's the difference between that public school system and, let's say, a public school system in Brownsville, Brooklyn, which is one of the toughest neighborhoods in the United States? Well, Compton. Everybody know about Compton. Compton, where's that? You know, what's the difference between that school system and that public schools? What the difference is? They both are funded by the state and federal government.
Well, obviously there is a huge difference, because when my daughter started kindergarten, they were reading in kindergarten. They had to know how to spell certain words before they got to kindergarten. My daughter was reading at three.
They had to spell it correctly?
Yes.
They spelled 30 words correctly.
They had
in pre-K. And you talk about 4 years old.
My daughter was reading at the age of three. We prepared her before she got to school. Now, I had two kids as a teenager. I had one in 16 and 19. I have three. My third one, I was 21. And I was pregnant. I was in college. And someone had told me that, like, if you tell your daughter, I had never heard of this before. Nobody ever told me this. They were like, you talk to your baby. While she was still in my stomach, I would talk to her, teach her things.
Yeah, yeah.
When I gave birth to her, I read to her. I told my daughter from day one, because somebody told me this is what you have to do. I was 21 when I found this out. And they told me, you tell your daughter. She can do anything. That's what I told my daughter. You can be anything. You can do anything. You're smart. I drilled it. My daughters, both of them, on a roll, all through school. They could compete with the best of them. So my daughter, she had confidence from jump. Okay, I was also working. My grandmother babysit for me. She taught my daughter how to read by the time she was three. And my daughter could read anything, not no little kids' books with pictures. We can pull any book from anywhere, an encyclopedia, and she could read.
Wow.
So kids have to be trained and they have to be taught, and you got to give them confidence. So what we did was we told them, you can do it, you can do it, you're smart, you're intelligent, and we started that early.
So
it made all the difference in the world.
So what do you think is missing from let me ask you this, and this probably – I kind of figured out what you're going to be talking about next week. What do you think is missing from, I talk about the average. I'm not talking about families that are dysfunctional, a lot of violence or whatever. I'm not talking about the big rich family. I talk about the average working family, where the family, where the parents go out working, the kids go out to school, and the kids are like, not supervised, but mom have to work late, the fathers not hardly involved, which is 75% of our families that the fathers are not involved, you know, which we got to be accountable for that. What do you think is missing from the structure whereas our kids, when I say I'll talk about black kids, are not graduating at a high rate compared to other cultures, and based on predominantly talk about white culture.
I think it starts at home, but I do think if your parents doesn't have that much education, they can't really help you. Not that they don't want to sometimes. Maybe they can't because they don't have the skills necessary to do it. And there, but that's not always true. Because
but you know,
I know
you are a very, you know, nobody out of all the guests I had on the last 18 months, 2 years, nobody never said that. They didn't say other things, you know. But no one said, hey, Mom can't read that well. Mom don't know the up-to-date mathematics. I sure don't, you know, up-to-date math. I never was a good math guy. I know arithmetic, but I know geometry, algebra, nah, man, get that out of here. But then how come there aren't resources that can assist that family to improve that child's educational needs?
Okay. What I did, my oldest daughter, I have two daughters and I have a son who's in the middle. My oldest daughter she struggled at first through first grade. She was having a little trouble, and I was like, okay. I told my parents, I'm like, okay, I have to do something. She needs help. I see it now. I see it early. People aren't blind. So when I got with them, I told them, look, she needs help. My parents said, okay, what does she need help with? I told them. They was like, we're getting her a tutor. We will pay for it. We found her a tutor who was a school teacher. Lived in another town next to where we live. She had a tutor for about a semester. After that, all the way through high school, she was on honor roll. She needed help in one area, and we got it for her early.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't wait, because when you see a problem, you have to take care of it immediately. You can't wait and think like, oh, it'll help them themselves. And kids learn differently.
You just hit the nail on the head. We come too late with the intervention. Like you said,
right.
You caught it at the beginning. You caught it in the early stages.
Yeah.
A lot of it's sometimes, you know, a kid problem is not assessed until a certain grade or whatever, until it's turned, or when they see when the professional identifies as a problem, what have you. And by then, it might be a day late and a dollar short, as they used to say. Because
exactly.
if the parent is the subject or whatever education, how is she going to know the educational needs and what stage or level that kid needs to be on by a certain age, because she don't know. And she won't go to the parent-teacher conference and ask the teacher why my child is not reading or why my child is not bringing home a book. Well, they'll take home books anymore. They have on that iPad, you know. So, I mean, if she don't know what questions to ask and she's not attending the meetings and nobody's reaching out to her, before you know it, the kid gonna be 14, 15 years old, and that's too late. They're in the streets.
Okay, another thing is, even if you didn't go to a meeting, I did, but if you see that child's grades, that right there, even if you didn't go to a meeting, if your child's grades are below a B, I don't care. I think if there's a C or below, there's an issue. So I was like, no, this, I expect this out of you. I had a very intelligent mother who was a valedictorian. She graduated from school. I mean, I have a lot of intelligent people in my family. I have doctors in my family, everything. That own businesses. I even have a cousin who was in the top 100, BET, all that. black businesses, but on the black, you know, entertainment magazine and Black Enterprise, whatever. But that is, there's no excuse. If you don't, you, for your child to fail, and you see that for the years, you don't care. I don't care what nobody says. Your interest is somewhere else. I had a teacher's meeting because where I live, my kids went to school, it's mostly white. And I told you, it's a Republican town. In my daughter's first grade, the first teacher's meeting, my daughter told me, she said, "Mom, my teacher's prejudiced." And I was, okay, because I was a smart little girl. And that was my little. I said, "Really?" Now, my daughter said she's prejudiced. There was no doubt in my mind that her teacher was prejudiced. So I'm like, okay. I went to the teacher's meeting. I took my daughter. The first thing that teacher told me was, "Did you know?" She's like, "Your daughter has not missed one thing on any test that I have given this entire year." But she didn't say it like, "Oh, I'm proud of her." She said it like it, she was in disbelief.
Yeah.
And my daughter was sitting there, and my daughter says, "Mom, I told you. Didn't I tell you she was prejudiced?" And I'm right in front of the teacher.
like she's schooling you.
Right. And this was first grade.
Mm.
I said, "Yeah." So the teacher's like, no, I'm not prejudiced. I'm not prejudiced. I love all my students." My daughter says, "Mom, no, she doesn't. She treats the white ones different."
Mm.
This was first grade.
Mm. And kids at that age do know.
They know.
That's a scientific fact. By the time a black kid has reached the age of five, they know the difference between, they know that something's different, especially if they're exposed to white children.
Right. And because it was only one other black child in her class, everybody else was white.
Mm-hmm.
And my daughter also said in front of the teacher right then and there, "But I'm the smartest one in this class."
Mm.
There's no student in here smarter than me. And my daughter was in, by the time she was in high school, she always stayed on the honor roll. She was going to college while she was in high school. And was on the honor roll in college. She started junior college in high school. And she was on the honor roll in high school at the same time. And had two jobs.
Mm.
And everybody said, "She's doing too much." I thought she was doing too much. But she said, "Mom, I got this." So I let her have it.
Okay. We got to wrap this up. Michonne, I look forward to you coming on the show next week. I had planned to call you Saturday, to reach out to you Saturday and see what your topic is going to be. So start thinking about the topic that you're going to be discussing next Tuesday.
Okay, I will do that.
All right. So
thank you
for listening to the show. And thank you for okay? So you have a nice week. And I'll reach
out
to you Saturday, okay?
All right.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, that's it for the night, folks. All night, and Carl to be on Saturday night at 8 p.m. So I'm out of here, and everybody, be careful, man. Be careful.